Hey guys, welcome to episode number 9 of Let's Book Talk. Today we're speaking with S.E. Babin, the author of Blade of Hope. Now the cool thing about this interview is that Blade of Hope is the first arc that I ever read while being on Book Talk. So it was really great that I was able to speak with her about not only the book, but also just what it's like writing fantasy novels, what it's like doing all that world building. So it was a really great conversation, and I can't wait for you guys to listen to it. So here we go. How did you develop your passion for storytelling?
I wouldn't say I developed it at all. It's sort of always been simmering there in my DNA. We don't have many writers in the family. I was, I think, one of the first. I have some cousins that write. But, you know, older people, older relatives, they, you know, they don't read much and they don't write too much. And I've always been a really voracious reader. Yeah. So even when I was really young, so those stories always just made me want to put pen to paper, but, you know, took a while.
Were there any stories in particular that really spoke to you of saying, you know, maybe one day this is something that I could see myself doing?
I was obsessed with the Wizard of Oz stories. A lot of people don't realize that there's more than one book, one or two books, and there's a whole series of them. Those were my absolute favorite when I was younger, that and the Phantom Tollbooth and just all of those fantasy kid stories that really made me want to write.
Awesome. Now, you know, in terms of reading those stories and, you know, the work by those authors as well, have you try to like sprinkle in some of those inspirations and influences into the books that you've written or your own writing style?
Mainly just the way that those books make me feel. I think I want to impart emotion in the books that I write and humor. I study a lot of books for both of those things because humor is so nuanced and it's so different depending on the character and the situation. And that's always something that's really interested me.
That's awesome because I can get that, you know, we'll jump into the book here in a second. But, you know, I think it's always a delicate balance of, you know, sprinkling in a little bit of everything as best as you can. So let's talk about Blade of Hope because I was lucky to get, you know, an advanced reader copy, or advanced review copy. And, you know, from the moment that I opened the book, I mean, your introduction to the world and the characters was so good that I was like, okay, I'm in, we're going to read it. So yeah, of course. If you could talk a bit about how that story came to be, what the writing process was like, and if there were any challenges in developing and writing this story.
There were a lot of challenges. This is actually my first fantasy that I've ever written. I've written numerous other books. I normally stay in the urban fantasy, which is the modern world, and cozy mystery. So this was extremely complicated for me because it was my very first book that I've ever written like this. But it started basically with a tiny nugget of an idea about a clueless girl with a great destiny. And I worked on it during my MFA program at Emerson College. So it was like the hardest thing I could have done. I don't know why I decided to do that and not something easier during that program. But I had never written one of those before. So it wasn't really smooth selling because in urban fantasy, which is, I write a lot, it's the modern world. I mean, you do have to do some world building, but it's not this immense thing where you have to just figure out everything. And so that was a lot of starts and stops and trying to figure everything out and how it would go.
Well, for me, you know, as just a regular reader, I can't tell that it was your first. I could not tell in the slightest. I thought the world was really rich. I thought the characters as well. And the underlying, you know, theme of it. And like you said, you're following Harlow, who, you know, is seemingly like just this regular girl trying to, you know, find her sister. And then you're like, wait, there's a little more than meets the eye with her. And you kind of get teased with that. throughout the book until, you know, that big moment when her powers are revealed. Can you talk a bit about, you know, the development of Harlow and, you know, just her relationship with Nova and how all of that came to be?
Yes. Families are complicated things. And sometimes, as much as we wish it wasn't so, they aren't always good for us. And I wanted to tell the story of sisters who chose each other.
Yeah.
Because sometimes, well, I think in many, many instances, most instances, the family you choose is always more powerful than the family by blood.
Yeah.
So Nova chose Harlow. She didn't have to. And so I think that that bond is much more powerful and stronger because she chose, she put her own life in danger to save Harlow. So I don't want to give too much away, but Harlow doesn't know who she is. She has no idea. She's just this clueless girl who's had a lot of terrible things happen to her. But Nova knows the entire time. She knows who Harlow is, and she knows who, she knows her own destiny.
Right.
So it's a very complicated story. And Nova had to overcome a lot of personal trauma on her own and roadblocks, and still save Harlow and raise her and be there as a mentor. So for me, it was about family and the family that you choose. And that was important for me to write.
Yeah. And I thought you knocked that out of the park because, you know, when you go into those, you know, sort of flashback sequences of seeing how the two of them kind of grew up with their foster parents and just how that relationship got stronger and stronger. And then, as we know, you know, from the beginning of the book, when we're in, you know, present day, that she's, that's her goal, is just finding her sister. And the only message she has is to go to the castle and, you know, we'll go from there. One thing that I really did like that you did with the story was the way that you utilized those flashback sequences, not only with Harlow and Nova, but with Harlow's parents and how that entire relationship went and how all those events unfolded. So what was it like? Was that always the goal with the flashback sequences, of just fleshing out the backstory a little bit? And what was it like writing that part of the story?
So that was my favorite part to write, because Shade is a really complicated character. He's my favorite, even more so than Harlow. He's a lonely person. He's someone who has sacrificed his life for the safety and prosperity of his kingdom. And he is nonplussed by Desmond's request to create the Virago. He sort of doesn't understand the vision, but he's always someone who just, he does what he's told for the most part. And so he doesn't quite realize that his destiny is falling into his lap whenever Harlow shows up. But his relationship with her parents was one of my favorite things, because it shows a different side of him and how strongly he can love for the people that he feels that are worthy.
That was my favorite part as well, was seeing that relationship with him and Harlow's parents and just how all those events unfolded. You know, in that sense in particular of, you know, developing what exactly happened to Harlow's parents, how that affected Shade, how that affects really the entire story. Did you ever have to go back and forth with how you really wanted that part of the story to go? Or was that always sort of set in stone, even from the early drafts?
I had to edit that a few times because I don't want to give too much away, but Shade's relationship with other people in the novel wasn't exactly planned how it turned out, but I thought that it really enriched things and it tied everything together. And I know that's so vague, and I don't mean so vague like that, but
oh, no worries.
Yeah, so Shade, I had a lot of editing to do with him, and then I had to cut a few scenes with Desmond and Harlow, which was a bummer. But you know, at the beginning of the novel, I think it's important to understand that Harlow is only 15. Mm-hmm. She's only 15 at the very start, and we don't know our own hearts when we're 15.
Right.
So I, and even up until like 18, like Desmonda is 18, and you know, she has a lot more complications with being a queen or a future queen in her bloodline and carrying on with that. So I think that there's a lot of things coming up, but I had to sort of tweak a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So people fully understood where Desmonda was coming from and where Shade was, and Harlow's just sort of caught up in the middle, but that doesn't always stay that way.
Right. No, and that's a great point, because I feel like for almost every character in the story, everybody has their own goal of what they want to happen at the end of their story. And, you know, going through this editing process where you unfortunately had to, you know, cut some things out and maybe trim some things up, was there any choice that really kind of broke your heart that you had to, you know, get rid of? Or was there something that you were really happy that you were able to keep in there? And again, I know we don't want to spoil anything, but if there's anything that, you know, or if you're saving something for the next book.
I'm saving more of Harlow's magic for the next book. And one thing that I was very happy that I got to keep was Bloom. A lot of people told me to cut Bloom's POV, but Bloom is extremely important. And she'll be even more important in the second book. She's a seer. So, and she knows that serious things, heartbreaking things are coming up for Harlow, but she doesn't have all of her power back. You know, she just gets bits and pieces. And so there are certain things that I had to sort of trickle in and couldn't go into a lot of detail because it would have just skewed the whole thing. But keeping Bloom was one of my favorite things that I got to do. And a lot of people in the MFA told me to cut her. And I just, that was one thing that I was just, no, I'm going to keep her.
Yeah. How important do you think it is for authors to, you know, take a stand sometimes with things like that of saying, no, this character is actually really important. I can't get rid of them.
I think it's extremely important because, especially if you have a series, because they have no idea what's going to happen in the next book. And so someone as minor as Bloom seems to be is not the case at all, you know, for the second book, because there's something big going to happen that was sort of set up in really a nuanced way in the first book. And she is going to be the one to come in and reveal something big. So I think it's very important to stick to your guns. On certain things, not everything, you know, you have to learn to pick your battles.
right.
That one was an important one for me.
Awesome. Yeah. Because, you know, I always find that really fascinating of, you know, just how one choice could change, you know, the trajectory of a story or a series. Now when it comes to the Virago, did you have any, inspiration for how that group and that group of characters was going to function or play off of each other? Or was that all created, you know, from scratch?
Well, the definition of Virago is an ill-tempered woman. And it made me laugh when I saw the word. And it's this sort of motley group with different personalities and different backgrounds. And they're going to, I know they sort of dispersed at the end of the book, but that's not always going to be that way. I mean, some of them will stay gone, but I really wanted to have a group of diverse, strong female characters. This is a female-centric fantasy. Mm-hmm. And so the Virago were always meant to be a little messed up. Borderline dysfunctional, but they come together when it matters.
Yeah, and you know, you get that reinforcing point from Shade a lot when they're doing the training of, like, you know, if we're not going to work together, this is not going to work at all. And I thought that was a really great, you know, just consistent beat that was being you know, really reinforced every time. And, you know, on the same note of, you know, creating the Virago, obviously there's a reason for it. And I actually did want to ask you about, you know, for a fantasy novel, when you have to write sort of the history of the world a bit, when you're explaining some of these things, how was that process either difficult or just interesting for you to kind of delve into?
Well, world building in this scope was difficult for me. And I tried to focus mostly on Thornwood and just give a little bit of history here and there. And I am not really a plotter. I'm mostly a pantser when I write. But that's very difficult to do when you're writing fantasy. Yeah. You have to have some things figured out. So I focus mostly on Harlow's Kingdom this time. But the second book is really going to open up the world. We're going to see the Kingdom of Witches and a few of the other places that have sort of pulled away from Thornwood because of what happened there. And we're going to see, you know, more of Lucien and other characters too. So I think the world building will be more in depth for the second book than it was the first, because the first was so focused on Harlow and her journey and her being inside that kingdom. And she had no idea that there were other places out there as vast as her kingdom is.
Right. Right. And I honestly can't wait for the next book. I was like, can I just read the next one, you know, right now after I finished it? I really enjoyed it. You know, the ending of the book, I had a huge smile on my face because I was like, okay, I really like where this is going. Was that always the ending that you had envisioned for book one, or did that also change as you were writing it?
It was always that reveal that was always going to happen, because I knew when I first started plotting who Nova was and how important she was, but how brave and kind she is too. So I wanted to make sure I didn't want people to see her like that immediately. I wanted them to sort of get to know her as the person that she is rather than what she is. So I had always planned to do it that way. I mean, a couple things changed on the way, but I always wanted Harlow to be completely stunned by it.
Yeah. And you conveyed that beautifully, because I could feel that emotion of her being like, wait, what? This is what, you know, this is what's been going on. And yeah, it came through like perfectly. So again, without spoiling anything, and if you can say anything, what can you tell us about book two as it stands right now?
Okay. I can talk a little bit about that. Harlow's going to figure out exactly what kind of power she has, and it's a doozy. She's going to figure out that her mother was hiding big secrets from her and from Magnus. So that's a big deal, because you don't see a lot of Magnus, but you think of him as sort of this all-powerful person, and he's just as fallible as the rest of them are. So they're going to visit the Kingdom of Witches, and their party is going to get separated. So Harlow is going to be on a journey, and she's going to learn more about who she really is. Lucien plays a larger part. He's going to have to decide if he's a hero or a coward. And Shade and Nova have some angst. Shade has always been the consummate protector, but he's not of noble blood, and so he feels unworthy of love. So I don't want to give too much away, but Nova doesn't give a fig about anyone's bloodline, especially not someone she loves. So that will have some resolution, a little resolution, maybe not complete though.
Awesome. Oh my God, I'm so excited. With stories like these that, you know, it's the jumping off point of a series. Like I mentioned, when you get to the very end, you're like, now I have the grueling wait for the next one, but I know it's going to be worth it. Now, you know, before we wrap up here, I did want to give you an opportunity to speak to the aspiring authors out there that maybe are, you know, in the midst of writing their debut novel or writing, you know, whatever they're working on. And they might be struggling with those feelings of self-doubt or, you know, should I even be writing this? I don't think it's good enough. And all those feelings that I'm sure writers and authors everywhere have at some point. What advice would you give to them to just keep going and, you know, trust their own creativity to just get it done, and then whatever happens after happens?
So basically the big one is to just keep going and keep writing. But I also recommend practicing your craft before you try to publish anything. And I think finding a really good critique group is also a good thing to do. But you might have to go through a few before you find one that really resonates with you, because not all feedback is good feedback.
Right.
and we're human, and a lot of our own inadequacies sometimes come out when we're giving feedback to others. So that was the hardest thing about the MFA that I went through, was the critique groups, because sometimes you know, you're reading these critiques and you're like, what?
Yeah, right.
But other times you're like, oh gosh, I do say just too much, or, you know, things like that. So you have to find people who really care and really can word their critiques in a critical but kind way. And I think that's very important for new writers, because there are some rules, conventions in writing, and it's helpful to have someone who's familiar with those and can kind of guide you the process. I mean, I take a look at my first work and just oh my gosh, it's you know, so bad. And then you think about, because I used to enter a lot of contests back when RWA was Romance Writers America was still really big. They had a ton of these amazing contests with judges who had been multi-published, and so it was a good way to get your work in front of them and to get really good feedback. Wasn't always amazing, but for the most part, you could count on getting some really good feedback. And that helped me a lot in, you know, as I went through, because I've been writing now since, well, forever, but I was in the military for a very long time. And so I didn't seriously start writing until probably 2010, about a year before I got out. And then it was this whole world I got dropped into, and you know, you just think, oh gosh, I am awful at this, you know, I'm never going to succeed in this, and those are self-doubts we all have. Imposter syndrome is huge in any kind of creative endeavor, I think, and so it's important to just be true to yourself, keep telling the stories that you want to, you know, tell, and then also practice. I mean, you know, it's, I think it's the old rule is, you really got it when you write 1,000,000 words. I think it's something like that. And that's a lot. That's several books, you know, because I feel like I've been doing this for 12, 13 years now, and I still don't feel like I have it. And I have an MFA in writing. So, and I've been doing this for years, and I've been published, and I still sometimes look at my work and think, oh my gosh, I am a complete hack.
Yeah, I feel like with all of us, whatever line of work we're in, we always have those feelings at some point where we're like, how did I get this job? What am I doing? You know, what is even happening?
Exactly.
But no, that is amazing advice, because I feel like I mean, it is true. Practice, it may not make perfect all the time, but it'll be really good by the end of it, I'm sure.
I agree. Yes.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure everybody listening will take that advice and probably sit at their computer and just start typing away and getting their stories written.
Well, I hope that's the only way they can get it done, is just to, you know, sit down and put your hands on the keyboard and just let it go. I mean, just type out a draft first. You can always go back and edit. So
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Cheryl, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. Before I let you go, if you could tell people where they can find you online, where they can find Blade of Hope, and if there's any other way people can support you.
Okay. Thank you so much, first of all, for having
Absolutely.
Me on this podcast. It was amazing. I am on Facebook mostly. My author page is there, and on my website at sebabin.com. I'm on Amazon. Most of my work is in the Kindle Unlimited library. So that's where Blade of Hope is, and then my other urban fantasies and cozy mysteries.
Awesome. Well, again, Cheryl, thank you so much. I'll make sure to put all those links in the description for you guys to go follow Cheryl's work, read Blade of Hope. I highly recommend it. I finished it, you know, in a matter of days. I couldn't put the book down. So highly recommend it, and make sure to keep an eye out for anything that Cheryl's got in the works. And we'll all be keeping our eyes out for book two, because I, again, cannot wait. Yeah, guys, thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thank you.